everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, yeah. And what a movie we have for you this week. Chosen by Julie. Thank you.
I'm so glad you heard me say that.
I loved it. I loved it. It's called The Intouchables. Not The Untouchables, but The Intouchables, because, yeah.
Well, it's French.
Yeah, it's a French movie, 2011. Right, directed by Olivier Nakachi.
And je ne sais pas.
And Eric Toledano. And they also wrote it, so that's neat.
Oh, yeah. And it stars François Cluzet, who, he is one of those people, when you see him, you go, oh, it's that French guy. He's in a lot of French movies, and he's very good. And
oh, he's good. Man.
Omar Sy,
mm-hmm.
who I think has gone on to be maybe in a Mission Impossible movie and a couple other things like that, but this is his first movie, and he is just
no way. That was his first
commanding
movie?
And charismatic. Yeah, I
did not know that.
So.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, this movie had me from the very first scene.
Really?
Yeah, although I was slightly confused at the beginning, but we can talk about that. Because
mm-hmm.
The movie opens with a scene that, you know, there's probably a word for this, but they open it with a scene and then they flash back for almost the whole movie and then meet at the end again.
Yeah, it's kind of bookends it.
Right, right.
As they finish it up.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Essentially, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. I was just going to talk more about that scene, but I'll talk to
you. Go right ahead.
Well, it was just, you know, at the very beginning, you know, the movie opens with him in a car with, what was his name? So, let's see, looking for names.
Driss.
So, Driss is Omar Sy, and Philippe is François Cluzet.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully I said that right. So Philippe is in this chair next to him, or in the seat next to him, and Driss is driving very fast through the streets. But then after that sequence ends, then you see Driss in a very, very nice house, you know, a super high class rich person house. And he's sitting in there,
like,
and he
Loire.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I mean Loire, Louvre. Sorry.
Right, right. It looks just like that. And he's applying for a job to be someone's caretaker. Now because we saw Philippe in the beginning with a beard, I did not realize that was the same person.
Oh,
and
really?
I may have missed a subtitle or something that said, and in the past, you know, 12 years ago or whatever, you know, however long.
They didn't. No, they don't.
So I was like, it took me a while to realize, oh, this is his first person.
Yeah, well, I will say that Rose watched it with me and she'd never seen it, which was nice because it's my third or fourth time seeing it. So you kind of get used to how the story is connecting. And she said that the first part of it felt like a dream because of the way it was shot and the very kind of serene music and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And she goes, until he starts driving super fast and then it changes into something else. And I'm like, well, that makes sense when you know the end of the movie. But so then you see that and then they go to something else altogether. And that's when you have to realize for yourself that it's a flashback. And the thing I like about him waiting for this job interview is you don't really know what it is at first. There's all these, like, maybe 20 guys sitting in this long row of chairs down the side of this hallway. And they're showing their shoes. And it's, you know, the loafers, the whatever, fairly nice shoes. And then this huge set of feet with these giant old tennis shoes on it. And what... to get the contrast, I think what you have to know is Omar Sy is, I guess he's not 7 feet tall, but he looks like he is. He's a huge black guy. And Senegalese, is that it?
The movie? From the movie, yeah.
Yeah, who's, you know, obviously been living in France and he speaks French quite fluently and everything. And then you have Philippe, who's a more regular size white guy. And so he's, everywhere he is, Driss is commanding the scene physically, if nothing else.
Definitely.
And then they show the different interviews with the people and you realize that they're interviewing to be a caretaker for somebody. And Driss comes in and he just slaps this piece of paper down and says, Just sign it. I'm here for the signature. And so it turns out he just wants to get signed so he can get on the dole. He needs three signatures, and this is one. And
yeah.
Because of his irreverent attitude and because of his lack of – it's funny because he doesn't know anything, and he'll just say whatever comes into his head a lot of the time. And he's often quite funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so when he shows up the next morning, they want to hire him.
Hmm. Well, yeah, he made me uncomfortable often.
Did he?
With his just outspokenness.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I was uncomfortable for Philippe. But
Philippe liked
it. It's what Philippe needed. Right. Exactly. And it's what Philippe wanted. Yeah, I agree.
Because he'd always have a little smile on his face.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talk about a hard part, because basically Philippe is a quadriplegic. So all the acting is being done with his face. He doesn't even get to move his head. Well, he can move his head, but he can't move anything else, really.
Hmm.
I thought he did a good job.
I thought he did a fantastic job, yeah. Yep, I can see his smile.
Mm-hmm. And so essentially, they don't show tons of Driss's background, but you see enough at the very beginning, especially, to realize he is coming from a family that's with a lot of kids, a mother who's supporting them. They're living in, I don't think I would call it a ghetto, but it's almost like the projects, except it doesn't seem as crime ridden as I would think of the projects as being.
Yeah.
And he's got to get this job because his mom kicks him out. And
right. And he's, yeah.
Yeah.
What was he, 20 something? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Early 20s. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So his mom kicking him out is not like a shocking thing. It's like, you need to get out of here.
But the way he reacts to it
shows he
cares. It matters to him. And he's just he's been away for 6 months. That's what he says. And you find out more about that later. But the mother clearly has a fairly good idea of what's going on, and that's why she kicks him out. And so you see some of those things every so often, but it doesn't dwell on them. It's really dwelling on Philippe and Driss's experience together. And I guess, how much more do you say?
Wow. I don't know. I think you've said it before, spoilers. That's really the crux of it, is the relationship between Philippe and Driss and how they need each other.
Mm-hmm.
And how they each pull each other up.
Yeah, and that almost makes it sound like you kind of expect this, you know, sentimental after-school type movie, and it is not like that at all. It is quite funny a lot of the time. It is very realistic, I think, in the way a lot of it is shown, and because it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And Philippe actually turned down 2 or 3 other people's screenplays to do his movie.
Wow.
This is the one he approved because it was funny.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And we can talk a little more about that later.
Yeah,
but
I do.
He really liked it when he saw it. And I thought that was kind of inspirational. And when I was able to look up his story, I feel like there used to be a Wikipedia page about him. And when I went to look fairly recently, I couldn't find anything unless I just wasn't looking right. But the first one I read was saying that, you know, pretty much this follows a lot of the real story.
Hmm. That's good.
Yeah. So.
How interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. Well, into spoiler territory.
Okay.
All right. Cool. Yeah, Driss was captivating.
Yes.
Like you said, he dominated the screen when he was on it, and I felt like he did that in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so the scene where they first meet, where he comes and he puts that piece of paper down there, and Philippe has been sitting behind, I forgot what the lady's name was.
Is it Magali?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Listening to people drone on and on, you know, and they were asking questions, you know, what's your motivation in doing this? And, you know, just a whole day's worth, it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And then in comes Driss and says, just sign this.
Yeah.
And it was like Philippe selected him immediately.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, this is the one I want. And what do you think it was?
Well, and of course you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Mm-hmm. But when the friend, like the family friend, comes and takes Philippe to, or goes to a restaurant or somewhere to meet Philippe and goes, look, the family wants me to talk to you. They're all worried about this. Mm-hmm. Because Philippe doesn't really have family living with him. There are obviously people who have been working for him for a long time, like a secretary and a housekeeper and various people, and they obviously care about him. They've worked for him and taken care of him in this condition. He has a daughter who he doesn't seem to see a lot, who's a teenager, medium teenager, I guess you'd say, maybe. And but the household is worried because Driss is clearly, from the streets and all this kind of thing and unused to caring for anybody like this. And he goes, I don't want pity. Philippe says, I took him. He goes, sometimes he forgets. He hands me the phone like I can take it. he'll just give me something and expect me to pick it up, and he's like, that's what I want. I do not want people to pity me, which I think is why the real Philippe liked the movie script. It adequately conveyed that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. I like that. Yeah. So, yeah, just from Driss's attitude, he says, yeah, this is somebody who won't pity me. Yep.
And I think... also, you never get the feeling until they're good friends and Philippe is just trying to broaden. He's going, I like classical music. I want you to like classical music, which it doesn't work at all. I mean, he's just the sequence where they happen to have a little orchestra there for Philippe's birthday. And he's like, wait. And he has them play all these wonderful bits of classical music that we all know by heart for Driss. And Driss is just, oh, I know that one. That's the commercial for, welfare. They play that when they're saying, wait. He goes, oh, I know this one. I think it's a coffee commercial background. And then he just make fun of stuff. And you realize he's not going to change him like that.
Yeah.
And when Driss then says, now I'm going to play you some of my music. And he loves Earth, Wind, and Fire. And he plays, what is it? I think it's just called Dance. I knew all the Earth, Wind, and Fire songs. These are from my college years.
Nice.
And, but he gets, what happens is Philippe is never going to like Earth, Wind, and Fire, you feel like. But what he likes is everybody, all the employees and everything, they all start dancing because Driss is dancing. And he gets them all to dance. And what he likes is watching his friends enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how they start changing each other.
Right. And that must be a relief to see, because everybody's kind of tight wound around him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, we don't want to do that because I don't want to offend you. They forgot for a second. So, yeah, that's exactly, that ties into what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, the thing I meant to say was when Driss is asking for the signature, at one point Philippe's like, so how do you like to be assisted? Mm-hmm. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, financially, how do you like to be assisted? He goes, I like it fine. How do you like it?
Yeah.
And so they kind of have a bit of a prickly thing there, but that's also what Philippe likes. No one ever talks back to him. No one treats him like a real person.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's neat that he realized it so quickly.
Yeah, and they do both have to be assisted, of course, what you realize as you watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like, so Driss is given this gorgeous bedroom. I thought that was hilarious, big old bathtub in there in the center of the room. That was neat.
Especially nice after you had just watched him in the old apartment where he's just trying to, he says he's taking a shower, but he's in the bathtub.
A tiny
and
bathtub.
All the little brothers and sisters are coming in and brushing their teeth and he's trying to get rid of them and...
Yeah.
Now he's got this whole thing that's as big as the kitchen to take a bath in.
Yeah. And he's got a little brother, I guess, but he said that was complicated.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's probably why his mom kicked him out, trying to save him, I guess, from influence.
Well, except that he wasn't, the funny thing is he wasn't influencing his brother, but you kind of wonder, the feeling I got was that she was like, I can't deal with you and all this.
Right.
And you find out later he'd just gotten out of jail. He'd been in there for 6 months for petty theft or something like that.
Yeah, and he sort of knew where his little brother was going down the wrong path, and you know, he wasn't stopping him.
Yeah,
he didn't stop him there, did he? So yeah, that's true. He stopped him later, or helped him later. That is
right.
Yeah.
So were there things that you especially liked about it?
I especially liked it's the relationship between those two. So it's moments.
Right.
It's moments between these two people. Things from, you know, Driss kind of freaking out about the rubber gloves and having to do something, you know.
We don't have to describe it.
He's like, I'm not doing that. I am not doing that. I'm not doing that. And then the moment where he takes the gloves.
Yeah.
That was kind of amazing.
Because we've been on that journey with him. Yeah.
And then there was the moment, I can only imagine how painful it was for Philippe to tell Driss that he should go.
Yeah.
Be with his family and take care of his little brother. And I will hire somebody else tomorrow. That had to have been horrible. But it was an act of love, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's he sacrifices himself for Driss.
Right. And
in a real way.
And then, we can talk more about that. But then the other moment, you know, I told you that there were times when I got uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Driss, like, dialing the phone. Okay, Philippe is having a correspondence with a woman via, you know, the writing each other. Uh-huh. And, you know, his letters are just
amazing.
Okay, so
they're horrible.
Yeah, they are horrible. And then he, Driss says, that's not all you're going to do, you know, and basically dials the number of this woman who had put her number in one of the letters.
Right.
And then
like, she wants you to call
and
her.
And she answers the phone, and he's like, you know, that was just incredibly uncomfortable for me to watch. It was like, Philippe, to me, clearly did not want that. He was afraid of it. He didn't want that. And I thought, you know, what are you doing? You know, but Philippe didn't act the way that I thought he would act, you know, like just getting super angry because he wanted to talk to her.
Yes. Way down deep.
Yeah. So he let it happen.
Yeah.
And then Driss put it on speakerphone, dropped the phone in his lap and walked out of the room. Mm-hmm. And Philippe had a great conversation.
Yeah, because I love that the next time you see him, he's on the headset or, you know, he's got the earbud and he's talking and he's just blah, 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 having the greatest time ever.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then I really liked, there was a scene where Driss, it was in the middle of the night and he had the baby monitor and he could hear that Philippe was having trouble breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And he got up and went and took care of him. It wasn't, turning over and saying, you know, he's fine. You know, he could have turned off the monitor because, you know, you get the feeling by then that he was irresponsible.
Yeah.
But,
because
wasn't.
The hot water.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was uncomfortable for me. After that part.
Yeah. That was nutty too. But then he just went in and, you know, took him out. He just kind of knew what Philippe needed, just, you know, almost like by instinct. You know, he said he needed air, but, you know, to pack him up and then start taking for this long walk in the middle of the night, you know, that's more than air.
Yeah. So, well, and didn't Philippe say at one point, you're good at this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, and also the thing of he didn't, you know, at the end, after Driss is gone and we see poor Philippe struggles with, you know, the various people who show up and they're all very uncertain. Mm-hmm. They're trying hard to please, but they have no personality. And, you know, the one guy comes in, he hears it in the middle of the night and he comes in, and he says, are you okay? And he's like, leave me, go away. And he does. And it's like, wait, don't listen to him. Take care of him. Even if all you can do is sit there with him, don't just abandon him.
Mm-hmm.
So Driss at least cared enough. He cared enough. In fact, after he calmed him down the first time with the compresses and talking to him and everything, he was asleep in the chair when it came back again that night.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't going to leave him.
Yep. Very cool.
Did you like the thing with the masseuses?
Yes, that was funny.
Because I loved that really frank conversation, because these are the things he'd say, like on that long walk, that, you know, other people wouldn't ask him. So what do you do about sex? Because women go by and they start talking. And he's like, well, I can, but I have no control and I can't feel anything. And he's like, well, so, oh, what a bummer. And he goes, well, there are other methods. You know, your ears are incredibly sensitive erogenous zones. And then later when the model is just rubbing his ears and I'm just laughing my ass off at that point.
That was pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
That was funny. Yeah. And all these just experiences, that Driss allows him to have.
Yeah, because he's treating him like a man.
He's treating him like a person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And not just a person, a man.
A man, yeah.
You know, where, you know, sex is important to everyone, but for a man, it's more important. Let's just say it. And, you know, this is, you know, treating you like a man.
Sure, sure.
So anyway, I love that.
Yeah, I thought that was great. Yeah, and then, see, another moment that comes to mind is shaving his beard off.
That was crazy.
Yeah, it was like, you know, he's got him, you know, Philippe can't do anything about it. And, you know, there were times where I thought he was really upset, you know, and maybe he was, but then he just laughed. Yeah.
But he had to be shaken out of the lethargy he'd fallen into also.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, and part of that was somebody who wouldn't bend, and that's just that goofing around and everything.
Yeah. I mean, how easy would it have been for Philippe to fall into despair? And he did, right? He fell into despair, but Driss pulled him out.
Yeah. Well, and it's because, you know, somebody who's handicapped, especially to that level, has to have special care. But I feel like what was illustrated in this really well is you forget the human person. Because, you know, clearly you're having to, you know, everything's having to be done for him. But, and you know, it's not that it makes it sound like his servants or employees were not caring, and they did care, but not to the independent level that Driss did. Driss brought something fresh, almost not really a friend, but by the end a friend.
Mm.
You know, and Philippe knew he needed somebody to treat him normally. So I really liked that because it showed a real respect for the human person and human life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he was lucky because he was so rich that he could have all that care. But the fact that he was a quadriplegic, excuse me, didn't mean that he didn't deserve to have all the, you know, a friendship, to be treated normally, to, you know, to be allowed to love. Where a lot of people would go, oh, I'll just, he's like, it's going to be a mind-to-mind thing. Because he was so petrified.
Mm.
And Driss is like, no way, man. I think she wants some nookie.
Yep. Yeah, that was something. That was something. Yeah.
Or just even taking him out to the park and throwing snowballs at him and stuff.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, it was all amazing stuff. And you know, This uncomfortableness I'm talking about is probably something that is good for me to experience, because it's like, you know, breaking me free a little bit. You know, it's like, oh, you know, yeah, what do I not do because of discomfort?
Right, where we're trying to be so careful and so correct.
Right, and around people, around certain people, right. And, you know, who am I treating in a special way, which is really a disrespectful way or something negative to a person that maybe I don't realize because of their situation, you know?
Yeah. Because I'll kick myself later over saying something insensitive, and then I'll go, well, I was just talking. I didn't mean anything. And it comes back again to that who's got a thin skin and who doesn't.
Right, right.
Because then you can't be yourself anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I liked that there were clear parallels made also of, you know, in this Driss, so far the way we've talked, Driss is, you know, the one who's helping break things open. But, you know, Driss had his own problems. He was longing for his mother's love and acceptance. And that's made really clear in a few different scenes, where he's away from Philippe and he's just parked outside the office building. His mother is cleaning, watching her. And then the look on his face when he and his younger brother are meeting her at the train.
Hmm.
You know, he he longs for that acceptance. And when you find out his family story, you understand a little bit more about why, what he's been through, his own family giving him up to them because they had a lot of kids and the aunt and uncle didn't. Right. Well, that makes a mark too. Yeah. And so he learns a lot of compassion when he takes care of Philippe. And you talked about the night pains is the biggest example of that. And he kind of, and when he is repaying it by things like, he won't let Philippe stay away from real life, not just the calling, but going, yeah, you guys should meet. Or, yeah, you know, you should go ahead and do this thing. Like when he has the faster motor put in the in the yeah, little wheelchair, awesome, or whatever. Because yeah, because Philippe says, I love to go fast. That's why I like to paraglide when I had my accident. And in fact, that kind of, if you don't mind, that brings us back to the beginning and end of the sections at the beginning and end. Because the thing is when you realize that the beginning part is after Philippe has fallen prey to despair because Driss left. And Driss was such a big part of opening his world up to him. And so they have Driss come back. And he takes him and puts him in the car. And it's very dreamlike. And then he just speeds like crazy. And then you realize when you watch that again at the end, oh, because he loves speed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he starts responding. And they start becoming, you know, like they used to be.
Right.
And so you're, all that comes back. And then there's a wonderful moment when Philippe has got to get away. You know, he was going to meet Eleanor and he couldn't handle it. And he's like, I'm getting out of here. Yeah. And so they get in a private plane, fly to the mountains and go paragliding.
Right.
And he makes Driss go. And Driss is not very happy.
That's right.
And
that's
there's,
funny and amazing. You know, like you said, that's how he got hurt in the first place, Philippe.
Right.
And he's like, let's go.
But he's brave enough to do that.
Yeah.
Again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the human relationship because his wife died and he loved her very much. And now can he enter into this? And he'd have to let her know he's paralyzed. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's got all these very human fears about that stuff, but he's willing to go paragliding again.
Yeah.
That's, you know, two different kinds of courage. One he's got and one he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And I like that because it's very complex. It's how people are.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not one note. And so Driss, when Driss does it, he loves it, you know, eventually. like, this is great. And you've got that Nina Simone song. Oh, my gosh, I love Nina Simone anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that I Feel Good, you know, song is great. Cool. So elemental.
Mm-hmm.
And but then at the end, I hadn't thought about this. Rose brought it up, so we can be glad Rose is watching with me, I guess. Driss essentially does the same thing when he takes him away in the car. Him driving him away parallels Philippe spiriting him away in the plane. And so Philippe takes him to the sky. Driss takes him to the sea. Two different, you know, one's the poor man's way.
Mm-hmm.
One's the rich man's way. But both are places that are eternal, essentially.
Oh, you know, how cool is that?
The sky. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And each one makes the other one stretch by doing it because Driss is experiencing something he would never have experienced and having to overcome a fear he would never have done. And then you've got, of course, Philippe. He's going to have to face Eleanor because Driss just sets it up and sets him up and leaves him there.
Yeah.
You know.
Right, right.
So each one is, here's what I'm going to do for you. And it's never put as, here's what I'm going to do for you.
Right.
And that's what makes it such a real friendship.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's not state what we're doing. It's just done.
Yeah, I'm just doing it because you need this. I know you need this. And, you know, Driss, you're not going to be hurt by this. And it's wonderful, and I want you to have it too.
Yeah.
The paragliding and everything.
So cool. Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, and it's a huge, it's such a feel-good movie. And in the best kind of way. You get done and your spirit, my spirit is refreshed. And one of the reasons I think is because it's such a wonderful look at friendship. You know, you meet the most unlikely people and you might not even really like them at first. And you're just tolerating them because of, we're in this group together. They begged me to have coffee with them all the time. They showed up for this thing over and over. But once you know them more, suddenly you do become friends and value each other in ways you would never have expected.
Yeah, that was impossible to predict. That's why, you know, I asked a couple times, you know, why Philippe picked him so quickly. I mean, what did he see? I know you're saying, well, he just wanted to be treated like a person. And mm-hmm. Driss was talking to him like a person. Not tiptoeing around him the first time they met. But I still thought that was kind of amazing. You know,
yeah,
to recognize that in each other somehow at a higher plane or something. Well, and then just move forward.
Maybe. But when I think of some of my friends and the examples I was giving were real examples of like, I've been thrown together with this person so much. Eventually you start sharing more of yourself with each other. Hmm. And I didn't necessarily like them right off or see anything of value right off. I just, you know, it was like somebody who was so insistent about having coffee and kept bugging me about it. I finally just would do it every couple weeks with them. Go, they must need something from me. I'll do it. And eventually I found myself looking forward to it and contacting them when they hadn't been getting a hold of me to get coffee. And that's when I went, oh, we're good friends now.
No, that's neat.
Yeah. So it's, you don't know what the need is that makes that. I don't even know why they kept wanting to do it, but you know,
yeah,
there you go.
For sure. Wonderful.
Go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say, and as an example of some of the just really silly stuff that was in it, I loved the thing when Philippe takes Driss to the opera.
Oh, yeah.
And they're having a conversation about meeting Eleanor, I think it is. But it's Wagner, I think. And there's a guy down there dressed like a tree. And the opera starts. And Driss has never seen any. He just totally freezes. And then just starts laughing his head off. And he's like, look, that man, he's a tree. And all the people around him are like, shh. And he's like, no, really, he's a tree. He's singing it. It's German.
Oh, my gosh.
And Philippe is dying trying to keep from laughing out loud because this is so entertaining. And that's when you suddenly flip and go, you know, I'm so used to the oddities of opera. You just kind of go, okay. But if you've never seen it, you realize how stupid it really was.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You're just like, oh, okay.
That was something.
Just stuff like that.
Yeah. Really, really funny.
Yeah. The tree thing is just the best.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy was green everywhere. That was good stuff.
No, he had a great voice, but, you know, you couldn't overlook the tree thing.
Yeah.
So.
You bet.
And I like also the you know, Driss is pushing Philippe to contact Eleanor and everything, and Philippe pushes Driss to get back into his real life. Of you've got to help take care of your brother. I mean, he doesn't say it like that, as you said. He just says, I think it's time for you to go. It's time for us to be done here.
Right, right.
You need to take care of your brother. And they go and contact the mother. So he's doing that again. And so they're both pushing each other in the best way, even when it hurts. But the other thing you see is it's so easy to see the stuff that Philippe gets from Driss. And I love the way they show what Driss learned from Philippe that shows up when he's job hunting. The whole time you see him back in the projects when he's headed down to see his friends and then onto the train, I think, or whatever, to go to the job interview, there's classical music playing in the background.
Oh, cool.
That is the cue that he's different now.
Uh-huh.
And when he shows, and I don't think it's not he's wearing earbuds or anything, it's just here, this is, he's different. He's enriched. And so then when he shows up to do the interview, he's able to have a richer conversation with the girl that he's talking to, you know, and it's for a delivery company. And he's going, oh, what you said counts out to 12 feet, like rhyme style. And I'm just like, wow. And then she's going, well, you know, there's our motto, like, you know, it's something about be on time. And he goes, oh, and next to it, you have Salvador Dali's melting watches, which is the artistic expression of that. And she's like, yes. Yeah. And I'm like, holy crap, you just made a wonderful connection because that's obviously why it's there.
Oh,
and
man.
So you can see he's really grown just from that experience. And
oh,
so
cool.
I love the fact that each of them is taking some of that into their own lives.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I love that. I didn't notice the classical music. Maybe I did at the time, but I don't remember it, but
seen
that's cool.
Times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have time to notice these
I
things.
Love it. I love it.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
So
yeah, but Omar Sy, love the guy. It's cool.
Oh man.
I was just looking at some other things he was in. He's in Inferno.
Oh.
Our friend, what's his name?
Dan Brown. I'm sorry to hear that because it got terrible reviews.
Did it really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it. So
everybody was like, oh, it's the worst of the three.
Oh, that's too bad.
And that's not saying much. The reviewers were just like, why do they keep doing this?
Horrible.
But it may have made lots of money because people often will just say, well, I'm going to go see the latest Tom Hanks movie.
Yes, I like that. Right.
I remember I was looking up recently. For some reason, I was looking up Tom Cruise movies. I think I was trying to find a recent one I could talk about in a movie discussion group.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, here's this one. Well, it got mixed reviews, but it made $250 million. Oh, well, here's this one. It got bad reviews, but it made $250 million. Well, here's this one. So only the ones that got like super good reviews, those were making $400 million. And I'm like, wow, people must really just go see a Tom Cruise movie, which I've never really done like that. Mm-hmm. And Rose was saying when she worked for a couple years at a movie theater during college and taking tickets or doing whatever. And she said everybody who worked there had to know what movies were playing when and be able to give a 2-sentence description, because she said all these people would just show up going, what's playing? We want to see a movie. They wouldn't even know what time. They'd just show up.
Wow.
And they'd go, oh, Tom Cruise, let's go see that. I was like, that's so different from how I do this.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry
I
for
mean,
that.
Going to the movies is expensive, for heaven's sakes. You know, sometimes, you know, in the holiday season, there are like 3 movies that I want to see. And if you have a family, you know, you're talking about $200 worth of movie watching there.
Yeah, you better care about seeing it on the big screen.
It's like, you know, Star Trek and, you know, trying to remember, you know, it was like Harry Potter and Star Trek and something else, probably Lord of the Rings. It was in that era, right?
All the epics. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, yes, we got huge things to watch.
And movies like this get left behind at that point.
And that was when I lived in Malad, too, so I had to drive an hour, no less.
Oh, my gosh.
It was hard work, Julie. Hard work.
Oh, I honor you for that hard work you put into your entertainment. That's right.
I probably pulled a hammy when I was walking in there. Yeah.
Getting out of the car and running up to the box office. That was tough.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry. I took us on a whole side trip.
No, that's good.
Whatever. Omar Sy.
I think I mentioned Omar Sy, but I just thought he was great.
He really was.
Yeah. And you talk about this other fella, and you know, I don't know that I'd seen him before, really, to be honest. I need to see what else he's been in. Francois Clouzet.
Mm-hmm.
There was
a movie that we just watched a few months, well, maybe a year ago. And we also showed it to some friends who just sat there glued to it and went, we're going to show this to our kids when they're all home for Christmas. And it is a thriller. And it's called Tell No One.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is the star of it. And we're like, oh, he has to run around. That'll be interesting. And after this movie.
Yeah.
And it is from an American mystery by a well-known author who I can't remember. But the author and this French director both worked on the movie script together, and it plays like an American thriller. The music, the sense of style, everything about how it shot, how fast it moves. I mean, we were watching with captions, but we had to stop sometimes and back up going, wait, I'm not sure I caught that, because you have to be connecting things all the time. It was just like an American movie. So good.
Oh, cool.
And this guy was really great in it, and I recommend it to anyone.
It's called
so
Tell
good.
No One, you said.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Noted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So, you know, he reminded me a little bit of Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, yeah. You know, he does have a bit of that look.
Yeah, sometimes when he'd break into a smile, it was like, oh, that's like a Dustin Hoffman smile
I'm not a huge Dustin Hoffman fan. I'm going to try to forget that. But yes, I do know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. No, excuse me.
I mean, he's fine. I like Dustin Hoffman, okay?
You bet.
It's fine.
Yeah, so I'm looking through some of these other films that he's been in. He's been in a lot. But I don't mm-hmm. recognize any of them, unfortunately. Most of them are French movies.
Yeah.
And I've seen some French movies, just not these French movies.
Yeah, he's just one of those. He's like a Tom Hanks kind of. I mean, I just think he's a hard-working actor. He gets given a lot of stuff because he's good.
Cool.
So.
Yeah.
And but I do, yeah, I do and they're like the Tom main Hanks. Ones.
You know, he makes good movies.
Who?
Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise, too.
Well, there you go. The two Toms.
The two Toms. Double Tom.
Very different.
Yeah, very different.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But, yeah, so I don't know if there's more to say about this or not. We might have covered everything, but.
I think we covered the plot and everything. I just, you know, I agree with what you said about how it made you feel. Yeah, I did come away from this feeling really good having watched it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is great. A great quality for a movie.
Yeah, and having watched it so many times, I just rewatched a different movie with some people. And I loved it, but I'd seen it a couple times in the last year. And I was like, too soon.
Hmm.
And this one I'd seen about a year ago a few months ago with like my book club when it was a movie night. Someone picked it. And I watched it and I thought, oh, I hope this doesn't do that. And I was like, nope, there are even things I don't really remember in here. Little things like the classical music in the background and that stuff. And I just thought I could just sit down and watch it again.
Hmm. Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I can see myself. This is a pool room movie yet again. I feel like I say that a lot, but it's true.
It's because we are both picking such great movies. And it's just so it's very genuine. And the fact that it's a true story is what adds the bit of depth to it. It's not something that someone made up. I mean, you know, they fashioned it into a story that's in a linear way that we can understand it and everything. But this is a real friendship because at the end they say Philippe, you know, is married and has two kids.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And the guy, his name isn't Driss because he was actually Moroccan. But, you know, he had his own business and three children and they're still close friends. And so you're just like, I love that.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, me too. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. That and you're right. That, you know, that does add a whole other depth to it, knowing that it was real.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really does that.
Yeah, it would be wonderful anyway, but, mm-hmm. you know, the reality is that this inspired it and that the guy was turning down those other scripts because they were all so serious.
And, you know, that and story, that,
in
yeah.
That in itself expresses kind of enough of his personality and why he wanted Driss around or, you know, whatever the guy's name was, I can't remember.
Right.
Abdul or something like that anyway.
You bet. But cool. Cool. So any other French movies you recommend? Besides that one you already did.
Yes, I know there actually is one and now I can't think of it. Sorry.
I still like the Three Colors movies. Maybe someday we'll do those.
I've never watched any of those and I
they're heavy, you know, it's like, yeah, heavy duty stuff. But
they're blue, on my
blue
list.
White and red. Yeah.
Yeah. They're so on my good. List.
Yeah. But and then that same director, Krzysztofski or something like that.
Mm-hmm. He's Polish, right?
Right. He did a set. It's called Decalogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched maybe the first three of those, and there's 10. But they're not full-length movies. So maybe I'll select all 10 for no. I'm just joking. But it's really heavy. And each one is supposed to be.
I think I have to wash my hair that night. Sorry.
Each one is supposed to be about a commandment.
Right.
But it's not obvious. So you watch it and you're like, okay, the first commandment is this. How does this pertain? And it's really, really interesting to think about it.
And I've heard about those. I think, I'm sorry to mention Rose so much, but, you know, since she's around now and we're talking about movies, she's watched them. And I think they were for TV, Polish TV, and that's why they're not as long as a regular movie.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, made for TV movies, but I'm thinking, what is the TV station that commissions this guy to make these things? They're supposed to be amazing, heavy, but amazing.
Right. Very heavy.
And and I'm just thinking, kudos to them.
Yeah, that is cool.
Which, while we're talking about things like TV stations and, you know, foreign countries like that. This is this. Have you heard of this documentary called Chuck Norris versus Communism?
Only from you. I haven't watched it yet, but you said you must watch this. So it is on my list.
Have I mentioned it on here?
I don't think you mentioned it on here. Okay. No, it was in an email.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's interviewing these people who were growing up in Romania when it was under communist rule, and the dictator, whose name I should know but can't remember right this second, you know, they had essentially one channel, and they were going to tell you what to watch and what to think and what to do. And what he didn't realize is there was a thriving market in VHSs from the West. And so it was Sylvester Stallone and Chuck Norris and all these action movies and mysteries and everything. And they would get these things and, you know, let everybody know. And then the neighbors would all come to whoever's house who had the hidden VCR, because you weren't allowed to have a VCR player, of course. Mm-hmm. And they would watch him because they said, we had no idea any other way of what things were like in the West. And they said, sometimes we would lose track of the plot because they'd be running through a grocery store and we'd just be going, look at all the food. What's that over there? You know, it was so sad.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the great things about it was it really talks about the power of story, because some of the young men were saying, well, they were little boys. And because of those kind of movies and Chuck Norris in this heroic moment, they describe it and they'd say, we'd go act that stuff out and it changed our games because suddenly we knew how to be heroes.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, yes, when you take people's stories away, they know something's wrong and they know something's not right about what they're hearing, but they don't know what they need.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it's not super long, but it's really interesting because I didn't know that this existed at all. And I mean, by the end of the government, these things were everywhere. And oh, and they talk about this lady who dubbed all of them, almost all of them.
Oh, wow.
So everything was in her voice. And to them, she is the voice of Chuck Norris and all Sylvester Stallone and all these people.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's highly entertaining, very interesting, you know.
So, oh, that's cool.
We've gone far off of everything.
That's all right. That's all right. Yeah, but thank you for picking this one.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm so glad you liked it.
Mm-hmm. I sure did. Sure did. So is there anything else we want to say about this movie? Have we said it all?
Yeah, there's one thing. And actually, I probably should have said this earlier because it's a big topic. But one of the most important things about this that is not hammered in, but it's that Philippe's life matters even if he can't do anything.
Oh, yeah.
He changes Driss's life, as we discussed, just by being a presence in Driss's environment.
Mm.
And this movie is so life-affirming that way. Because Driss is another person who would get thrown away by the system.
Right. And but, thus untouchable, right?
Right. They're both untouchable. But Philippe is especially untouchable because this goes back to the employees kind of going, oh, yes, but you're an invalid first. But just his sheer presence and personality matter. And this goes to so many issues of our day. You know, you've got assisted suicide by even young people, or maybe especially young people who, you know, I just can't live like that. Or I want to die with dignity. And I guess the way I said that sounded mocking, and I shouldn't have, because that's a genuine fear. But what this shows is that there's so much more that until you experience it, your fears hold you back from.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know for if sure. struck you. Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. You know, in that way, as I'm listening to you describe that, in that way, it's this movie goes against the grain of like the way society is headed, you know, it feels different, you know, and until you mentioned that, I hadn't really thought about it that much, but it really does, you know, like you said, it's life affirming and, I don't know, maybe it's the mood that I'm in or whatever, but it does tilt things another way. It does seem to be something that stands out against, sort of prevailing wisdom, I guess. Or the zeitgeist, however you want to term it. Yeah, go ahead.
And maybe one of the differences is that Philippe doesn't feel sorry for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he might, but he wants somebody who won't show him pity because that's all anyone is doing. And in these other, you know, the instances I read about before we started talking about, you know, young woman, you know, 22, terminal illness, has this party and then kills herself and or assisted suicide or, you know, so and so, and I'm going to die with dignity. And, you know, it doesn't matter how you die. There's nothing dignified about it. I mean, there is a dignity to death. And I don't know if you've been there when anybody has died. I've been there once.
But no, I have not.
Yeah, but us all sitting around Tom's mother, Hannah holding her hand while she breathes her last, it was actually beautiful. You know, we loved her to the very last breath. And it was allowed to happen the way it should have. And I have to say, the couple days before that, or, you know, that day and then the day before, she was going through something that even if she wasn't conscious, I mean, there was a whole afternoon and evening where she was like, her head was tilted into like a corner of the room, and she was moving her face as if she were listening or talking. Now, I don't know what was happening, and you can say it was just her brain. You can say it was, you know, she was getting instruction from a guardian angel or whatever you want to say, but there's something to that. And the church, actually, the reason the church doesn't like assisted suicide is they're like, you know, death is a natural part of the process. And part of what it's supposed to do is help you, of course, as we would say, for the next life. And it does it by, I had something here I was going to read about it, but I can't remember now. It's, it's kind of a process of healing almost. Important things happen on that journey. And suffering and pain are a part of it. And this is part of the tradition of Western civilization. And so it can be a very meaningful part of life. And so Cardinal Daniel DiNardo of Galveston, Houston, he was the chairman of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops on pro-life committees, said, "Compassion isn't to say, here's a pill. It's to show people the ways we can assist you up to the time life calls you, because it's a meaningful, gradual process of renunciation and surrender." So I'm reading from this book called How to Defend the Faith Without Raising Your Voice. And it's got all these wonderful explanations, starting with, we know the reason people say this isn't because they're callous. They want to be kind. But here are reasons for believing the way we do.
Wow, good. Yeah, I have that book.
Oh, do you?
I do. I like it.
Me too.
Cool. But yeah, that's profound. And you're right. That was, yeah. You know, when you think about this movie, that's why it stands out, really. I mean, again, you said life-affirming, and that is it. And, but yeah, it's a gem.
Well, and Rose thought of it kind of as the kind of going along with the diving bell and the butterfly. I don't know if you ever saw that.
The diving bell, that's the name of a movie? Because I have not heard of it.
It's about a guy. It's about a guy. It might be French also. It's about a guy who has a stroke, and he is left only able to blink one eye, maybe. So it's not, you know, it's life-affirming in that basically what happens is they figure out what, you know, that they can have him look at that. They can point out the alphabet. He actually writes a book this way.
Oh, wow.
And that's the book he wrote. And so it got turned into a movie. And Rose found it life-affirming. Me, with my terrible fear of dying through that kind of a method, did not find it as, you know, wonderful as I found this movie. But it still has that point of your life still matters. You're still in there. And unlike movies like Me Before You, I think it is, which was kind of a assisted suicide, you know, love letter in a way. And then Million Dollar Baby, which was, that's the way that ended too.
Wow.
It's the only way it can really be right. And that's,
yeah.
I know it feels right and kind, but you look at Philippe and you feel like we're too ready to give up on people because we can, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, how difficult.
My husband also made the point. He goes, also, it's up to the people, not government policies about stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. and the more government policies that support things like assisted suicide or whatever other method you might think of for somebody in a situation like this, it just makes it sound like, oh, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and every time the decision's made, it makes it easier to make, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then people become one of a pile of papers on someone's desk, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because the government and those decisions that are just thrown out there tend to be kind of a form of utilitarianism where it's the greatest good for the greatest number, not looking at each individual.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah. We don't want an economic. Yeah, it's like, you know, puts the economics in the wrong way, in the wrong direction.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what it is. You know, if you to save money, you need to make the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
And we want as little of that as possible.
Well, it's kind of making an economic decision in a way, or it's using an economic kind of idea to judge the worth of each human life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super easy when it's a large group of people and it's just one person over here having it happen. Or, but when it's you or someone you love, all of a sudden it gets really real, and it's really real for every single person.
Mm, right.
And it's kind of like the things where people attempted suicide and then they're able, you know, they got help, they didn't go through with it. And, you know, maybe a year later, they're like, oh, thank goodness I didn't do that. Because the other thing is, it never touches just one person.
Hmm.
It affects everyone.
Yeah. It affects everybody. Yep.
And this shows how positively it can affect people versus the, you know, the death negatively would affect somebody. So.
Yeah, that's great. I love that thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about how sin, you know, can affect those around you, right? In ways that you don't understand, but. Yeah, this is the flip side of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's not easy sometimes to make that positive
decision. It's much more difficult, but hey, you know, that's true of a lot of things.
Yeah. A lot of things that turn out to be really good in life, we can't see what's going to happen, and so we just make these quick decisions.
Mm.
And, you know, the bigger they are, the more you just want to get it settled, and sometimes you just kind of got to go through the process, and that's hard.
Yeah. Yep. You bet. Yep. Go watch it, folks.
Life affirming.
Yep. Life affirming.
Etc. Funny.
That's right. All good not reasons to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Not just life affirming. You're not just going to sit and cry.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yep.
Right.
All right. Okay. So next up, we've got a book called Concourse.
Right.
By S.J. Roseanne.
Hard-boiled mystery.
Ooh, cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have it on Kindle. Ready to roll.
One that I just discovered.
Oh,
neat. I mean, you know, like a couple months ago.
Okay.
I read it. And cool. That's when I went, how interesting the things that this mystery takes you through. And so I wanted to talk to someone about it. So you got picked, Scott.
Lucky. Yay.
I hope so.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay.
Yay. They were forced to eat Robin's minstrels.
There was much rejoicing.
Brave and bold Sir Robin.
Yes.
Fun stuff.
Yes.
Cool. Well, thank you very, very much.
Yes. I'm glad you liked it.
This was wonderful. Yeah.
Thanks to everybody. I feel like we were a little more disconnected during this one. But I feel like that's okay.
I think so. We've had things like, major presidential elections and stuff going on.
Last night.
Distracting. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just a bit distracted.
But the movie was still wonderful and is perfect to watch no matter whose side you were on.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You won't care about politics anymore after you watch the movie. So let's all watch it together.
It'll make you feel good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
Yes. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.